Mr. Murphy.
Good morning. The district court's decision to enhance Mr. Franklin's guideline range for possession of a dangerous weapon in the commission of a drug crime was utterly unsupported by the facts and therefore clearly erroneous. Moreover, we believe that the government waived the position that it's raising in this court when it openly agreed with Mr. Franklin's position at sentencing. We believe this is a significant issue. Nevertheless, I wish to address the substantive issue raised in our brief first. The uncontroverted evidence demonstrated that the pocket knife found in Mr. Franklin's van at the time the police searched it was unrelated to Mr. Franklin's drug purchase earlier in the day. The evidence, in fact, that the
uncontradicted, because the government argues, well, why was he talking about the knife, you know, in that recorded phone conversation afterwards?
Well,
why
the government
the knife.
Interestingly, the government, in its own words at the sentencing, explained to the district court, the police stopped Mr. Franklin's on a ruse.
They're not answering my question.
I am.
I'm asking you about the phone conversation.
And that's what I'm trying to get to.
Well, you get to it first.
Judge,
why did he bring up the knife in the phone conversation?
Because he was explaining to Mr. Hardy, his source, that the police had used a ruse at the time of the search in which they claimed that they were investigating a stabbing. He was referring to that in the phone conversation, not any relation to his purchase of drugs, but expressing his concern at the police thinking that he might have actually committed a stabbing since he had a knife in the van. And interestingly, Mr. Hardy, the source, says openly, I don't know anything about that knife. That's why. And most importantly, I think, the government explained that in their own words at sentencing to Judge Holderman. That's a red herring by the government to raise that. The rest of the facts that are indicated are that Mr. Franklin never handled or used the knife, and indeed was never seen with that knife in his possession. He possessed that knife in his work as an electrician. That's uncontradicted. He and his source, Mr. Hardy, were amicable, unfortunately amicable associates with no prior history of violence or animosity in their dealings.
How long had he been an electrician?
I believe, Judge, though I'm not sure it was precisely in the record, it had been several years that he had been.
Was he in a union?
No, he was, and he admitted that to the district court. He told the judge that he was not a unionized. He was essentially did his own work on the side.
Did he have any tax returns that identified his occupation as electrician?
He did not, but it was uncontradicted, and the government conceded that point. There's no dispute. It's not disputed in the record. It was not disputed by Judge Holderman that he was an electrician. And most importantly, the police officers that confiscated the drugs and knew the presence of the knife left that knife with Mr. Franklin. I see my lights on, and I would like to reserve a couple of minutes for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Murphy. Ms. Egan?
Good morning. May it please the court. The district court's application of the guidelines two-level dangerous weapon enhancement was not clearly erroneous.
Why does the government even want to defend that?
Your Honor,
we didn't care about it at the sentencing, and the police officers who arrested him were content that he was an electrician, and yet the knife was for his electrician business, not in connection with any drug dealing. They were satisfied with that, and so were you.
The question here is whether the district court's decision was clearly erroneous.
Why don't you just say I don't take any position on that?
We analyzed the question of whether we should, in fact, concede error in this case.
You don't have to concede error. You can just say we won't defend it.
Your Honor, after reviewing the record and after reviewing the case law, the government does believe that the district court did not clearly err in its position, and that's why we're taking the position that we're taking here today. To respond to a point raised by counsel in his reply brief, the defendant contends that the government waived their position, that they're taking an inconsistent position. Here the question is entirely a different one. It's whether or not the district court's decision was clearly erroneous.
Doesn't it seem that the district court might be a little confused here with his sheath business? You know, The judge seemed to indicate, you know, if there's a sheath that holds a longer blade, when in fact, you know, if you check all the definitions of sheath, it could also encompass a pocket knife that's put in and with a, you know, a snap over and a. Are you at all concerned that maybe the district judge had a view of sort of a hunting knife, Bowie knife kind of thing, and the defendant was trying to explain that it was not that type of knife? Doesn't that give you a little pause, maybe, that the district court focus in exercising its judgment may have been off the mark on what kind of knife we had here?
I agree, Your Honor, that it certainly appears from the district court's comments at sentencing that the district court's view or had in mind a sheath that is the type that would be an open blade, right, like a hunting knife per se. However, the district court not only pointed to its view of the type of knife in assessing the defendant's credibility, it also pointed to the defendant's different testimony in terms of where the knife was found that varied from what the officers said in their report. And that's important, Your Honor, because it indicates that the district court certainly, although it did not expressly say so, seemed to implicitly disbelieve the defendant in his statements about the knife. Additionally, Your Honor, there are facts that are not in dispute from which a district court could reasonably find that it is not clearly improbable. Those facts include the fact that the defendant had just done a drug deal with Mr. Hardy. He had just come from that drug deal. He had cocaine, crack cocaine, in his car, along with a knife that was within reach. Additionally, there was the phone call afterward where the defendant discussed the knife, certainly in the context, as counsel said, in the context of this ruse at which the officers had approached the car, but also he made mention of the fact that, you know, that knife that I keep on the side of my seat. It's certainly possible the court could reasonably infer from that this was not a knife purely for electrical work, but a knife for some other purpose, such that it would have come up in conversation in the past with his drug supplier and could have arguably...
Well, if they're pals and they're in the same car, then it would be reasonable for the defendant to think that the other fellow would remember that knife, right? If he customarily has it on the armrest and this other person has been in his car, then it wouldn't be natural to say, you know that knife I keep on the armrest.
That's one possibility. Or the district court could reasonably conclude that they discussed the fact that he keeps a knife with him when he travels from Minnesota to Chicago, carrying drugs and money with him, and that knife is for protection. Additionally,
it's
as the government...
It's a feeble mode of protection, though, doesn't it? Never heard of drug dealers who carry knives instead of guns.
It certainly is a weapon.
You'd be attacked by someone with a gun, so what good would your knife do?
Your Honor, and it was not in dispute whether or not this was a weapon that could inflict serious bodily harm. Possibly not as good of a weapon as a gun, but something that could be used as a weapon nonetheless.
Yeah, but have you ever seen a drug case in which the weapon of the drug dealer was a knife? I can't remember any such case.
Your Honor, there are cases where drug dealers will carry knives, sometimes in addition to a gun, sometimes not in addition to a gun. And that, Your Honor, that's possibly why, as reflected in both the briefs of both parties, there's not a lot of case law out there involving the two-level enhancement for a knife.
Did you cite any case involving a drug dealer carrying a gun, carrying a knife?
There were four cases that were cited, Your Honor, in our brief involving knives.
Were they drug cases?
I believe that all of them were drug cases, Your Honor. I can't be positive of that, but at least some of them were. And they were cases from outside of this circuit. Your Honor, we believe that the record supports a finding that the district court's decision was not clearly erroneous, and we ask that you affirm.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Egan. So, Mr. Murphy, a couple of minutes.
In the district court, the government said, in its spoken word, the knife was clearly unrelated to the drug crime. In its brief, it says...
That's okay. Suppose the government says...
It is okay. I'm sorry, Judge.
The government says, you know, knife is unrelated. And then the judge says, no, I disagree. I think it's related. Suppose the judge gives good reasons and the government says, well, I guess we're wrong. It was related. They're not foreclosed from changing their minds in that way.
Well, I'm not so sure, Judge, that the government has changed its mind. I presume if the government were asked that it would continue to maintain that the knife was clearly unrelated to the drug offense. But the point is, that is my understanding of the government's position. Moreover, Judge, on the one hand, they're saying the knife was clearly unrelated. On the other hand, they're saying it was not clearly improbable that it was involved in the drug offense. That is logically...
Oh, come on now.
That is logically not...
No, it isn't, because it's a different situation. That's what they thought then. Now they think something different.
I don't believe the government thinks something different.
They're lying or what?
No, I think that, Judge...
Look, you're wasting your time. It's a very weak argument.
I certainly do not believe I'm wasting my time. Well, I believe the government wasted...
Maybe the other judges will be persuaded that the government can't change its mind.
Your argument, Mr. Murphy, is basically they feel an obligation to represent the district judge's position. Isn't that your argument?
My position is the government should have, at the very least, probably I agree with that, at the very least take no position on appeal, but certainly I think it probably should have, consistent with its position both at the time of the negotiation of the plea agreement the plea agreement.
All I have to say is we didn't think it was related. Now the judge disagreed. We think the judge's position is reasonable. We might still disagree with the judge, but think that he was acting within his discretion. There's no inconsistency there.
I believe, Judge, that there is an inconsistency there.
There isn't an inconsistency, because a judge has discretion. So you might disagree with his exercise of discretion and yet say it's not an abuse of discretion, right?
I believe in certain circumstances that can
not
be true.
In certain circumstances, there is a difference between a mistake and an abuse of discretion.
But in the language
of... And the lawyer can say, I don't agree with the judge, or I didn't agree with the judge, but I don't think it was an abuse of discretion. And that's perfectly consistent.
In the language of this guideline, which speaks about a knife which is clearly unrelated, and the government has said it's clearly unrelated, it cannot jibe with saying that the judge's decision was not clearly erroneous. That is our position. With respect to the substance of the case, moreover, the judge's decision was clearly erroneous, and we'd ask this court to reverse the finding. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Murphy.